deficits of resources such as mining, oil particularly, and others. So the war on drugs, what it does is eliminate excess and then address the deficit by targeting on territories. One could ask the question, and Guillaume is here and would know better than me, why is the Noboa family and Noboa president and the banana plantations that he mentioned and we all know have been involved in drug trafficking or should at least be investigated seriously, not touched? And yet the target is President Petro, who one can say anything good or bad about his policies, but he is not a drug trafficker, and his approach to the whole drug issue is the exchange of the drug production for good conditions and living conditions for people. So when you put tariffs on these legal products, then you're forcing people into the drug trade and then you kill them.
We have to leave it there, but we're going to do an interview in Spanish with all three of our guests. Dr. Manuel Rosenthal, thank you for joining us from Cauca, Colombia. Former Foreign Minister Guillaume Long, thank you for joining us from New Delhi, India. Former Foreign Minister from Ecuador. And we want to thank the ambassador as well, Daniel Garcia Pena. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, Child Care for Construction, in partnership with Business Oregon, working to support those caring for children of journey workers in Oregon, even family and friends. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley finishes a 22-hour anti-Trump filibuster.
On Monday, a federal court overturned one of the two holds on Trump sending the National Guard to Portland.
And Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield is asking a federal court to drop Marion County's ongoing lawsuit.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2025. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Josh Salem. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley spoke for 22 hours in the U.S. Senate, starting Tuesday afternoon and ending this afternoon, the 22nd day of the government shutdown. He said, quote, "I've come to the Senate floor tonight to ring the alarm bells. We're in the most perilous moment, the biggest threat to our republic since the Civil War," end quote. He left the floor over 22 hours later after enumerating and detailing Trump's unprecedented assaults on American institutions and the rule of law. Merkley said, quote, "This is an extraordinarily dangerous moment, an authoritarian president proceeding to attack free speech, attack free press, weaponize the Department of Justice, and use it against those who disagree with him, and in seeking the court's permission to send the military into our cities to attack people who are peacefully protesting," end quote. Earlier this year, Senator Cory Booker held the Senate floor for a record 25 hours, similarly warning about Trump's authoritarian takeover of the U.S. government.
On Monday, a federal appeals court for the Ninth Circuit overturned a hold on Trump federalizing National Guard troops. The hold was one of two put in place by a federal judge in Portland, Judge Karen Immergut. The Ninth Circuit Court decision stated that Trump's federalization of the National Guard was, quote, "likely lawful use of his statutory authority," end quote. That's based on the provisions that Trump has the authority as President of the United States to federalize National Guard members to enforce federal law when local law enforcement is not capable. The Federal Justice Department also asked Immergut to lift her second hold, which bars the Trump administration from sending National Guard troops to Oregon. The request says her reasoning for the second order was the same as the one they overturned. Immergut's second order currently remains in place. The second hold would be up on October 29th if no further action is taken. Despite months of immigration and customs enforcement officers and police tear gassing entire neighborhoods and assaulting peaceful protesters, the Ninth Circuit decision credits federal officers with keeping things calm. Bob Day, chief of Portland Police, said in an interview on October 7th, quote, "As I've said now several times, we do not need the National Guard at this point to address these issues," end quote. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek has continued to advocate for the second hold, saying that the federal troops are unnecessary in Portland.
Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield is asking a federal judge to drop a Marion County lawsuit. Marion County filed suit on August 18th of this year to clarify if they should share personal information of men on parole with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This suit was filed after ICE sent subpoenas to the Marion County Sheriff's Office demanding information about five men on parole. The county ultimately wants a federal judge to smooth over differences between state sanctuary laws, state public record laws, and federal laws so it is less confusing for them. The county filed against Governor Tina Kotek, U.S. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, and Acting ICE Director Todd Lyons. 20 out of 36 Oregon counties currently support the county's request for clarification. On Monday, October 20th, Oregon's Attorney General Dan Rayfield filed for the case to be dismissed without further action. Rayfield pointed to state law, saying that though the information about people on parole is public information, state law does not allow public bodies or federal government to access this information. And sanctuary state laws prohibit any governmental body from sharing information about individuals with ICE. He argues that Oregon state laws, quote, unequivocally prohibit Marion County from producing the requested information without a court order. Because of the clarity that he presented, he says there is nothing else for the court to do but drop the case.
Oregon wineries will receive $125 million in damages for crop destruction from the smoke from the 2020 Labor Day fires. Pacific Corp and Pacific Power were accused of negligence after failing to cut power to their lines during a windstorm. That was despite warnings from Oregon fire officials, and those power lines ultimately sparked the deadly fires. The fires blanketed the state in smoke, impacting the wine grapes. Smoky weather makes for an ashy-tasting wine, so the wildfire smoke made the crop unsellable. Pacific Corp has settled some 2,700 claims against the company for its role in the Labor Day fires so far, with thousands more victims ahead. OPB reports that multiple people have died before their cases could be heard.
A Spokane nonprofit focused on organizing for human rights in Washington and abroad is celebrating its 50-year anniversary. Founded in 1975, the Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane offers workshops on nonviolent protest and is leading a campaign to create an emergency aid fund for immigrants in the community impacted by the uptick in ICE activity. Isabel Charlet has the details.
The Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane is celebrating 50 years of activism on issues ranging from nuclear waste to human rights. As a teenager concerned about the U.S. war in Iraq, Liz Moore, now the group's executive director, found Pajals by looking up peace in the phone book. She says the group's priorities in its 50th year are the same as in its first year, working for a vision of peace, economic justice, and racial equity.
What that means right now is organizing against white Christian nationalism and authoritarianism, and to push for inclusive multiracial democracy as a shared vision for our country.
Pajals offers workshops on protesting and understanding First Amendment rights, says Moore. The group is also pushing Spokane's lawmakers to create an emergency aid fund to support immigrant families in the area who are being impacted by the increase in ICE activity. Moore says Pajals also trains volunteers to serve as peacekeepers at local events such as Pride and World Refugee Day, where they help de-escalate tensions in the crowd.
It's a really wonderful team of people who are willing to put their bodies in motion for the sake of their values and their love of their community.
Moore says intergenerational organizing has been key in sustaining the group these 50 years. Pajals has a Young Activist Leaders program that teaches young people the basics of community organizing and event planning. Now, adds Moore, four graduates from that program are staff members at Pajals. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Democrats and GOP condemn threats made to Hakeem Jeffries. Time is running out to renew ACA subsidies amid the government shutdown, and Vice President Vance reaffirms the strength of Israel-Gaza ceasefire. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vera with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The violence on the left is far more prevalent than the violence on the right. Don't make me go through the list. You all know it. All of these assassination, the assassination culture that's been advanced now, this is the left in almost every case that is advancing this and not the right. So let's not make it a partisan issue.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson says the left is causing a surge in political violence. A pardoned January 6th rioter and supporter of President Donald Trump is charged with making a terroristic threat for saying he would kill House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries at a speech next week. Jeffries says he and other public officials won't cower.
We will continue to show up, stand up and speak up for the American people to improve their quality of life, to address the extremism that is being unleashed on everyday Americans by this administration all across the country. We will not bend. We will not break. We will never bow down.
Republicans cite the shooting of Turning Point USA co-founder Charlie Kirk when accusing Democrats of supporting violence, but one of the two men accused of attempting to assassinate Trump was himself a Republican, and a Republican shot and killed two Democratic Minnesota lawmakers over the summer. A now shelved Department of Justice report found right-wing domestic terrorism is far more common and the left-wing and Islamist extremist violence combined. The government shutdown continues with the Senate voting on a bill to pay federal workers during the shutdown. House Democrats aren't supporting it, saying it only pays furloughed employees and not those working without pay since October 1st. And Democratic leaders say they won't fund the government without a deal on extending Affordable Care Act subsidies or restoring other health care cuts made to pay for tax breaks for the wealthy. Former Indiana representative and current president of Club for Growth, David McIntosh, says that position won't hold.
The people don't want the government to be held hostage for one political party's agenda or the other. I think what they should do is reopen the government, have people go back to work, and then negotiate what do they want to do about COVID subsidies.
ACA open enrollment begins November 1st, and the insurance subsidies are overwhelmingly popular. They've helped double the number of people covered by Obamacare since 2021, and more than 3 in 4 of them lived in states that voted for Trump. Priyata Lang with the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative says losing these subsidies impacts anyone paying for health insurance.
This is not just going to affect people who buy insurance on the individual or small group marketplace. It's going to ripple through commercial insurance. Everyone is going to see their premiums rise as a result of this.
After a series of Israeli strikes, the ceasefire in Gaza is getting back on track. Israel says it was responding to Palestinian militants attacking its soldiers and killing two. Speaking from Israel, Vice President J.D. Vance says this is part of the peace process, despite his perception of American media rooting for failure.
Every time there's an act of violence, there's this inclination to say, oh, this is the end of the ceasefire. This is the end of the peace plan. It's not the end. It is, in fact, exactly how this is going to have to happen when you have people who hate each other, who have been fighting against each other for a very long time.
President Trump is seeking $230 million from the Justice Department for its criminal investigations into whether his campaign helped with proven Russian interference in the 2016 election. He also says his rights were violated when the FBI searched his Florida estate for classified documents. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jake Thomas from Street Roots about Portland's proposed ban on AI algorithmic rental price fixing. Then, we get an inside look at QDoc, the world's only festival devoted to queer documentaries. On this weekend, it's Cinema 21. At 6, it's The Underground, produced by KBOO's own youth collective. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with an overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 65. Today in history, in 2012, cyclist Lance Armstrong is formally stripped of his 7 Tour de France titles after being charged for doping. He was also banned from all sanctioned bicycling events. The quote of the day is from British novelist Doris Lessing, born this day in 1919. She said, "Any human anywhere will blossom in 100 unexpected talents and capacities simply by being given the opportunity to do so."
Hundreds of Alaska residents are still displaced from their homes after Typhoon Halong. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Hundreds of people remain displaced a week after the remnants of a typhoon wreaked havoc on some of Alaska's most remote and vulnerable communities. Reporter Emily Schwing has this update.
One of the hardest hit communities is Kipnuk, a village that sits in the heart of Alaska's Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Last week, tribal administrator Tristan Carl made the tough decision to mass evacuate his friends and family. Now he says they have several needs, including housing, clothing, and transportation, as well as access to foods that aren't found in conventional grocery stores.
I know we're going to be missing some our subsistence food. Hopefully some locals will be able to drop some off or even invite some families for some. And that's how we lived off for many, many, many centuries.
James Amick is also from Kipnuk. He, his friends, and family are still reeling from the storm.
It's going to be in our minds for a while, you know. But the way I think we can get through that is if we talk like to our behavioral health and just get everything off of our mind, I think that would help us.
Alaska's governor declared a state disaster and has requested a federal disaster declaration from the Trump administration. Alaska's congressional delegation has also penned a letter to the president in support of a federal disaster declaration. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Meanwhile, when it comes to native co-management of fish and wildlife in the state, engagement and unity are key. That was the message at a panel about subsistence at the recent Alaska Federation of Natives convention. Ayolna Naiden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Representatives from several Alaska Native organizations called for a unified approach alongside government agencies to manage wildlife and fish when they met last week. Clinton Cook Sr. is the Craig Tribal Association president. He emphasized the importance of prioritizing Alaska Native voices when making decisions about wildlife.
Our people have always managed our lands. We know where the salmon run. We know where the deer are. We know when the clams are safe.
Cook says the first step is engagement. He encourages tribal residents to participate in advisory councils for both federal and state regulatory agencies.
So you have a voice in what happens in your region. That's huge.
A push for resource development in several Alaska regions has been met with opposition from some tribal groups. Karen Linnell is the executive director of the ATNA Intertribal Resource Commission. She called for a composed and unified response in the middle of a quickly changing political environment.
With the current administration, the next couple years, we need to try to hold our ground with where we're at and not lose.
Representatives talked about funding challenges, lack of guidelines, and the need to re-educate regional directors when they change with the new administrations. Linnell says that one strategy that has made the difference over the years is collaborating with neighboring regions and figuring out how to continue practicing traditional ways of life without harming resources other regions rely on.
Wait a minute, you do duck calls, right? When you're out duck hunting, we call a moose in. So why is it different? When we started to support each other, we started to see change.
Promoting change also requires research, Linnell says. She hopes that more tribal organizations will have capacity to monitor wildlife and fish and collect their own data that they can trust. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naiden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The U.S. military struck another alleged drug smuggling boat today, but this one was off the coast of Colombia in the Pacific, not in the Caribbean. This is the eighth such airstrike since September 2nd, and it brings the death count to around 35. Defense Secretary Peter Hegseth said, quote, "Just as Al-Qaeda waged war on our homeland, these cartels are waging war on our border and our people," end quote. Yesterday, The Guardian revealed that the CIA is providing the bulk of the intelligence used to carry out these airstrikes. Colombian President Gustavo Petro has said several strikes killed Colombians, and he accused the United States of murder. Trump responded by saying he would cut off foreign aid to Colombia.
New polling finds over three-quarters of Americans say they want Congress to extend the Affordable Care Act's enhanced premium tax credits, set to expire at the end of this year. If the credits expire, the majority of those who purchase their own insurance say they wouldn't be able to afford premiums. Farah Siddiqui has more from Ohio.
A new poll finds more than 3/4 of people say they want Congress to extend the Affordable Care Act subsidies set to expire at the end of this year. About 583,000 Ohioans buy health insurance through the ACA marketplace, putting the state among those at highest risk if the enhanced tax credits expire. Ashley Kurzinger is with KFF, a nonprofit health policy research polling and news organization that conducted the survey. She says with open enrollment right around the corner, many people don't realize the tax credits have an expiration date.
And when we ask people who purchase this type of coverage, what would you do if your premiums nearly doubled? 4 in 10 said that they would go without health coverage.
Losing that extra help would increase premiums by an average of more than 100%, from around $800 a month this year to $1,900 a month in 2026. About 24 million Americans had Affordable Care Act marketplace health coverage as of April, a record high for the fourth year in a row, according to federal data. Kurzinger adds that people who don't get benefits through an employer or federal programs like Medicaid or Medicare are struggling the most to afford health care.
This is something that has bipartisan support. Majorities of Democrats, independents, and Republicans all want to see the federal government extend these subsidies for people who buy their own coverage.
According to the poll, more than 8 in 10 people say they would be concerned about the expiration of the tax credits if they heard that health coverage would become unaffordable for many people who buy their own insurance. For Ohio News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
L.A. Mayor Karen Bass is joining Democrats in the Senate and House to implement an investigation into immigration and customs enforcement raids and detainments. The investigation follows the publication of a ProPublica story that found over 170 American citizens have been held by ICE this year. Representative Robert Garcia of California spoke Monday about what the investigation is attempting to do and how. He says the investigators are requesting all records and documents on how ICE has treated U.S. citizens around the country. Garcia said, quote, "We want to understand what they are doing in our neighborhoods and how it is being funded," end quote. The investigation is also bringing attention to the repeated arrests of immigrants when they are showing up for scheduled and mandatory check-ins with ICE and at immigration court. The ProPublica report finds immigrants and Americans alike have been dragged, beaten, tased, and shot by ICE agents. Mayor Bass said, quote, "It's important that we say today what is happening to undocumented residents is also happening to U.S. citizens, which means this can happen to anyone, to all of us, at any period of time."
Researchers say a change in parental advice about peanuts prevented tens of thousands of allergy cases. For many years, parents were told to keep their young children away from peanuts, worried about them having a serious allergic reaction. In 2015, a landmark study led to a different type of advice. It found that exposing babies to peanuts early on actually made it less likely that they would become allergic. Pediatricians and parents took on that new information, and as a result, research published in the journal Pediatrics finds that peanut allergies dropped by 43%. Over the past decade, the study estimates that's prevented at least 40,000 cases. Recommendations from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases from 2017 says infants who are at high risk of peanut allergy should be exposed to those foods as early as 4 to 6 months.
Cecil Roberts is officially retiring as president of the United Mine Workers of America. As Nadia Ramlagan reports, Roberts likens miners' struggles to biblical stories, and he references the power of God, an example of how religion has shaped the labor struggle in Appalachia.
The second longest acting president of the United Mine Workers of America, Cecil Roberts, officially retires this month. West Virginia-born Roberts saw the United Mine Workers through some of its most difficult times in the past few decades as the coal industry changed and companies pushed back on health benefits, health care, and retirement benefits. Roberts likens miners' struggles to biblical stories, referencing the power of God and the teachings of Jesus, and speaks in dynamic cadences found in the Appalachian Church, says Richard Callahan, associate professor of religious studies at Gonzaga University.
Not only are we running out of coal in the ground, but a lot of people are moving toward fuel sources that don't rely on coal. So through all of that, Cecil Roberts has been running the union that represents the coal miners.
Miner preachers and independent churches were central to the organization of miners in the 1930s, too, during periods of violence between mine operators and miners over working conditions, wages, and unionization. Callahan says religion's connection to the labor struggle is evident in everything from union meetings and churches to prayers on picket lines. And it's not surprising to find religious rhetoric, particularly Christian, in labor organizing. He says United Auto Workers President Sean Fain is another example of a union leader whose speeches draw from the Bible.
Religion is not on one side or another, so to speak, but people turn to religion and use religion to navigate change, to find purpose and meaning, and as a resource for identity and community.
Today, the United Mine Workers of America is focused less on coal itself, which Callahan says miners know cannot last forever. The union represents members in other sectors, including public employees, manufacturing, healthcare, and employees of the Navajo Nation. It has also focused its work on an equitable transition to renewable energy. This is Nadia Romlagan for West Virginia News Service.
Your homeowner's insurance policy almost certainly doesn't cover floods. People can buy a separate flood insurance policy, a step experts are urging people to take as floods get more extreme and more common, even outside of high-risk flood zones. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Last year, flooding from Hurricane Helene damaged or destroyed tens of thousands of homes in the southeast. Tropical Cyclone Beryl brought devastating river floods to Vermont and New York. And this year, flash floods have damaged homes in Kentucky, Texas, Pennsylvania, New Mexico, and Illinois.
Floods are the most common, costly natural disasters in the United States, yet flood insurance remains one of the most underutilized forms of protection.
That's Loretta Werders of the Insurance Information Institute. She says many people lack coverage because they think flood insurance is included as part of their standard homeowner's insurance. But in reality, it must be purchased separately. Others assume they're safe from floods because they live inland, or because their mortgage lender does not require them to buy flood insurance. But FEMA reports that about 40% of National Flood Insurance Program claims come from outside officially designated high-risk flood zones.
We keep telling people flooding can happen anywhere, even on a mountaintop.
So Werders hopes people will consider getting flood insurance no matter where they live.
It is probably the largest insurance gap in the U.S., and we just want to educate people about the need to have that coverage.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Much like American poet and social activist Langston Hughes did, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants America to be America again.
The No Kings rallies were great generators of community energy, but the faux king's still there. Mike Johnson called the rallies Hate America rallies. So his America has a king? A unitary executive who overrules 250 years of constitutional democracy? America is many things. Illusion, reality, slogans, a dream, our communities. Allen Ginsberg wrote, "It occurs to me that I am America. We are all Americans here, and America is each of us. Trump and all of his minions suffer from paranoia. If they can't win the game, they're going to take the ball at gunpoint and go home. They're taking away jobs, taking away services and benefits, taking away the ability to walk down the street and not worry about that black SUV that just slowed down. They've shut down the government our taxes paid for, except for the military and other armed enforcement, and aren't likely to give it back soon. We can't wait for spring weather to depose the king. All I want for Christmas is a functioning democracy." For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Hannah Francis. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Nadia Romlagan, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
This is KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined today by Street Roots reporter Jake Thomas to talk about his latest story for the paper. It's called City Ban on AI Software Used by Landlords Headed Back to Vote. Critics say landlords use the software to fix rent prices and withhold available homes during a housing crisis. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. This new article covers the reinvigoration of Portland City Council's proposed ban on AI algorithmic rental price fixing. I want to get into some of the changes here in a minute, but catch our listeners up to speed. What is the issue that this ordinance would address?
So this ordinance is addressed at some really high-tech software that's being used by landlords to determine rents. And that may not sound so bad, but really what ends up happening is they use this proprietary algorithms to get a sense of just what